Travis, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. I note that we're in the final couple weeks of Thursday Day Baseball is the best thing on the sports calendar. I'm anxious to get to September and October.
Not that far. Your Bills, you know, like you got to have some optimism about your Bills this year.
I'm over my skis with optimism. That's the only thing that's holding me back is the strength of that schedule. The rest of it, I'm way over my skis with it.
Well, the strength of the division isn't going to be very good, so you got that going for you.
I agree with you. I do think Miami's going to have a pretty good year. I think Miami has a real shot to be a playoff team, but yeah, I think New England's going to be terrible, and I think the Jets are going to be terrible. So I take that over the AFC West any day.
Yeah, AFC West. I mean, that conference is wild, especially AFC West and the AFC North, right? I mean, there's really no easy team to beat. I mean, some people are picking the Raiders to go to the Super Bowl, and some people are picking the Raiders to finish fourth. That's the kind of division the AFC West is. And then the North, if Cleveland's the worst team, and if they trade for Jimmy G, man, I think there's no easy touch and easy in either division, really.
No, I think the crazy part, and you know, the NHL had this too. Remember, if you remember 6-7 years ago when the California teams, Detroit, Chicago, were exceptionally good out west.
Yeah,
the Western Conference was so loaded with the top end teams. The crazy thing in the NFL right now is I think, and don't quote me on the exact numbers, but I think it's pretty close. By the time you get to like the 9th or 10th best AFC team, you're rolling up on probably the 4th best NFC team. And if you kind of go through, okay, and everyone's got a different power ranking, right? But if you go through the iterative process, by the time you get to about the 4th or 5th NFC team, you've already hit about 10 AFC teams, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, there is definitely an imbalance, and that's good news for the likes of Tom Brady, Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, and some of those quarterbacks.
Unreal.
All right, let's get to some hockey. Great article this week on just the tiers of defensemen. You had 5 different tiers, and Ottawa was in the 4th tier. Tell us just how you came about going through the process of ranking all the different blue lines around the NHL.
Yeah, it's a time-consuming process in a good way because you're comparing every grouping on a relative basis to every other grouping on a relative basis around the league. And honestly, like look at this Ottawa lineup. There is 6 ways to Sunday of being excited with this group. I mean, they are, in my opinion, they generally have a playoff caliber lineup for the first time in a long time. And I think there is every reason to be super optimistic about the majority of their prospects getting there. We already see how their top 9 has developed. I wrote right off the rip at the summer when they traded for DeBrincat. I thought they had one of the better top 6s in the entire league. But when free agency opened up, people were looking and expecting for a defensive move. And, you know, Pierre Dorion did such a good job of grabbing a number of impact players that it just felt like, oh, yep, the other shoe's going to drop on the blue line solution. And it hasn't yet. And that doesn't mean it won't. But I think the concern here is, and, you know, majority of the teams in a hard cap league, you have some area of weakness that could preclude your team from making the postseason or a deep playoff run, whatever the expectations are. In Ottawa's case, like, the reality is right now with the way their roster is set up and, you know, Branstrom's still in RFA, they've got Travis Hamonic, Nick Holden, and possibly most concerningly Nikita Zaitsev all penciled in for regular minutes. And at least one of those guys is likely going to see top 4 minutes, which is a little bit scary. Now, you know, I think Thomas Chabot has more than shown he can hold down his pairing, and there's big expectations on multiple rookies, multiple young players coming through the lineup. But at least for the immediate season, they kind of have this contract quagmire of guys that they really shouldn't want playing, and if playing, really depth minutes, occupying multiple spots on that blue line. And whether it's Jacob Chychrun, who they've danced around for 2-3 months now, or someone else, it really does feel like they need one more top 4 defender to start feeling like, yep, this team actually could sit inside of the top 8 by 82 games. I think they're close, but it's hard to get overly excited about this group when you look at the defensive composition of this team, and it just pales in comparison to the forwards right now.
Where do you sit on like left shot or any shot defenseman playing their offside? And I guess the second part of that question would be, do you think that they should continue to try to land Jake Chychrun, or is a move like Ethan Bear or someone of that ilk maybe more realistic and better off long-term? Like, how do you view that situation?
Well, I don't think Chychrun is an all-star caliber player, but I thought there was a good argument for three players kind of entering the fray, and it was John Marino, it was Mackenzie Weegar, and it was Jacob Chychrun. And the argument for Chychrun is, I think he's just a second pairing guy, and like I think at this point of his career, maybe his ceiling is a little bit more muted than when he first entered the league, but he's still a good NHL defender. And more importantly, I can't emphasize this enough, for a team that has spent a lot of money for the first time in eternity at the organizational level, like Chychrun makes a lot of sense because he is on such a team-friendly contract. He's got a few more years on his deal. I want to say it's like $4.5 million average annual. Like, his contract and his age, by the way, kind of really dovetail with what Ottawa would want to see this roster do over the next 3-4 years, whereas compared to a player like Weegar, who just got his long-term deal in Florida, number one, he was going to be more expensive as a puck mover. He's probably a better player. But two, he was also due another contract, whereas Chychrun is really under this, you know, pre-COVID-ish, you know, still relatively team-friendly cap hit that Ottawa could slide into that lineup. And if they are bearish on Brännström long-term, and I'm not saying they necessarily are, but I don't think they are excited about him today as they were a year and a half ago, and you got guys like Lassie Thompson around the corner, Jake Sanderson around the corner. Like, one or more of these guys is invariably going to be pushed out, and at some point, whether it's this year or beyond, the Zaitsevs and the Hamonic deals are going to come off the books too. But immediately for this year, if you are talking about a playoff caliber team and what to go after, it's hard. The options are very limited. Marino's gone off the board too. I still think it comes back to Chychrun. And, you know, at this point, it really just becomes, is Ottawa willing to move, you know, material picks to get a player who is good, but I think just as important, has a very, very friendly contract relative to any financial risk you might incur to shore up that second pairing. I think it still makes the most sense.
So if they can't land Chychrun, if the price doesn't come down, is there a second tier of guys that you could see that could be available, you know, like an Ethan Bear? Like that's a name that keeps coming up. Is that a name that you'd be comfortable with, or is he not a top four guy for you?
I think Ethan Bear would be worth a flyer at a minimum. I mean, if you look at Carolina, it's the same piece, but go look at Carolina's blue line. I mean, I have them as a quasi tier two, tier one team. They probably have they do have a top five blue line in the league. And Ethan Bear is probably in that sixth-ish, potentially even seventh hole. So I don't know that he would cost the moon. And I think he's absolutely a guy I'd take a flyer on. But I think more to your point too, I'm not entirely, you know, unsure, and I don't think anyone is right now, that some of these younger players, these prospects that they want to force into the lineup, maybe it is worth seeing what they look like in an extended role. And I think the point of what I'm getting at here is the key thing here is Travis Hamonic, Nikita Zaitsev, Nick Holden, even though Nick Holden I thought was decent, just the reality of where he is in his career and his age right now, you cannot have three guys or two to three of these guys playing significant minutes. And if the options end up becoming, look, we don't have him straight away, but we're going to push Sanderson in the top four. And you know what? We're going to give Brännström a third pairing role, but it's going to be an entrenched third pairing role. And one of these guys is going to be a routine healthy scratch, or we're going to find another home for him in Arizona, probably, then so be it. I think what they have to, the reality that they're fighting against is they have too many negatives occupying the roster right now on the blue line that even if they can replace them through purely internal options, which I don't think is the best plan for making the playoffs for this year, I still think that's better than, you know, Nikita Zaitsev, for example, being third in usage rate on your blue line. I mean, that's just, that's going to sink a team.
Travis, I've really enjoyed the your pieces on tiers and depth around the leagues. So let's move to the center ice position, where at the start of last year, from a Sens perspective, I think most fans and media thought that they were really thin there. And what are they going to do up the middle? And all of a sudden, Josh Norris proves what he's become. Tim Stützle has looked terrific since moving to the center ice position. And you got Shane Pinto, who also has looked really comfortable at the NHL level despite being injured throughout most of his time so far. You have them slotted in the third tier. What do you like about their group, and are they close? Are they just progression away from maybe joining that second or first tier?
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible by year end. I think the two things that would have held them back this go around is we just haven't seen enough of Pinto at the NHL level. I mean, I think he played four or five games all last year. Unfortunate injury, it is what it is. Norris had a fantastic scoring year, but I think anyone who watched Ottawa last year knows that the continued development of him as a two-way center will be key. I think the gasoline behind this, you know, that can take this fire to another level is Stützle, because I thought he was at times last year the most impressive of the young players that Ottawa was bringing, and it wasn't necessarily so much how much he was scoring on a given night or any defensive play he would make. I think his situational awareness and understanding when to push the pace of play, opening up passing lanes for shooters, I thought it was so good at such a young age. And if he really takes this step and entrenches himself by year end as a bona fide, you know, quasi first line center, and you've already got Norris and a developing Pinto behind him, the reason why you like this Ottawa group is you can run three healthy lines down the middle of the ice, where you have confidence in all three of those guys. Now, I think you want to see Norris take a big progressive step. I think you want to see a little bit more scoring from Stützle this following year. I think you want to see Pinto finish a full season, right? Like those things are obvious, but we've seen plenty enough from each of these guys to be excited about them. And I think more importantly, this go around, they have the weapons on at the wing that will actually take a lot of these scoring chances and turn it into goals. I mean, the Alex DeBrincat deal was this front office's feather in the cap moment. I mean, they flat out stole him from Chicago, and whether he scores 30 goals or 35 or 41 like last year, he just adds another ridiculous scoring element from the wing. Claude Giroux brought into free agency. There's so much more offensive talent around these guys right now that I think that's going to be a boon for these centers as well. So this group, I think there's plenty of reason to be excited about these three centers in particular.
Travis Yost is our guest talking hockey from TSN.ca. And Travis, you mentioned, you know, for the first time in a long time, it looks like a playoff caliber lineup. Who are some of the teams that could be ripe for the pickings for you when you look at teams that were in the playoffs last year? All eight in the East had 100+.
Yeah, I think there's a couple. So this is the interesting thing. Outside of the, you know, we've talked the NFL off the rip and how the AFC has this big imbalance. I think there's an imbalance starting to brew again in the NHL, this time swinging to the Eastern Conference, because, yeah, we expect Pittsburgh and Boston, who are really the last two holdouts of the teams from 10, 15 years ago, who ridiculously have remained competitive all these years. I mean, we see Boston bringing it back for one more year. We see Pittsburgh kind of punting on the cap issues for the time being. These are, whether they break down this year or next year, they're coming relatively soon. Now, I don't think Boston is ready to take a slip quite yet, but Boston is dealing with multiple injuries. Charlie McAvoy's out recovering long-term. Brad Marchand's out recovering long-term. Bergeron, another year older. David Krejci, another year older. So, like, this group is, if not playoff to non-playoff, I don't think they are the same effective caliber team as they were even just a couple seasons ago. And I think that is also true across the division with Pittsburgh. I think the interesting thing, though, is Ottawa is not the only team that I think is taking a step forward. I think Detroit has done a lot of work to be more competitive. Do I think they're a playoff team? No. Do I think they'll win more games this year? Yes. And again, those aren't, we just saw a number of other moves made from really underperforming or outside of the playoff teams. Buffalo was a much improved team in the second half of last year when they brought Alex Tuck in. So I think winning may be incrementally harder because outside of Montreal, I don't know how many teams are going to roll over and die in the Eastern Conference, where I think you've got a handful of them out west, and really I would say more so outside of the Central. So Ottawa is going to be in an absolute knife fight, but if I'm looking around, I think Tampa and Toronto are absolutely rock solid. I don't expect Florida to take that big of a dive. And, you know, across the Rangers and Carolina still look as good as ever. So, I mean, you've got five or six of these spots occupied. We have fight for the last two or three. But Ottawa is just, I think Ottawa is just as good as any of these other teams in that tier 6 to 10 range. But it really is going to come down, I think, in a way they protect their goaltenders with how they dress this blue line going into October.
How do you view the tier of teams behind Colorado in the West?
It's really interesting because as I was one of my keys, I think I have like a mid-tier findings, like three or four things that I noticed. I think it was New Jersey looks way improved. Vancouver's forwards are ridiculous. They're 21st in scoring every year. So, what's going on there? So I had a few of these observations. But the triumvirate of St. Louis, Minnesota, Nashville, man, they are extremely good and, most importantly, deep teams with very few holes down the lineup that I think we would be thinking about a little bit differently if it wasn't big brother, little brother with Colorado within that division. I mean, I actually consider these teams on par with Edmonton. Certainly I do Nashville, certainly I do Minnesota, certainly I do St. Louis, just because they may not have as top-to-top kind of top-end talent as Edmonton, but, man, they run deeper. And I think that central division, that core group of four teams, that is going to be really fun hockey because, I think Carolina is night and day better than the rest of the league right now? Yes, in large part because of the top of the lineup, but like we even saw in the playoff, even though Colorado skated through the postseason, the one team that really did give them some degree of difficulty was St. Louis. And I know that's a little forgotten, but it was second round series, I think it ended in six. But St. Louis was, they were able to frustrate Colorado in a way like we saw Vegas the year prior do, that these deeper teams who can play a more possession-oriented game can slow Colorado down a bit. But honestly, in the West, you can draw a line between Colorado and everyone choosing.
What basketball team wins more games in the New York area this year, your Knicks or the, I guess, the most dramatic team in NBA history, I'm going to call them, with Kyrie, KD, Ben Simmons, and the Brooklyn Nets? Or is it all dependent on the Knicks adding Donovan Mitchell?
Let me tell you something. So there's an old adage in the NFL, like no matter what you've ever done, if you bet against Tom Brady the last, 25 years or however long he's been in the league at this point, the amount of money you lost is so colossal. Even when it may have made sense, just betting against him is just always a bad idea and not profitable. And I'm going to use that logic and apply it here. I don't care how big of a mess the Nets are. If you bet against the Knicks, you are generally going to be right. So without knowing anything about what the Nets do and whether they send KD and Kyrie and everyone else to the moon or not, I am going to bet against the Knicks and say the Knicks will find a way to screw this up, and they'll finish 13th in the East.
Do you at least like Jalen Brunson?
I do like Jalen Brunson. He's one of those did they maybe overpay for him? Are you sure or whatever? But I just love in any sport that super scrappy. I'm going to get it. I'm not going to roll over any shift. I'm getting 6 minutes on the floor. I'm going to play as hard as I can for that stretch of minutes. You always, I think most fans are wired that way, but you always find yourself more attuned to players like that. And I mean, Brunson is such a gamer. And I mean, if you're a Knicks fan, if you're nothing else, you're a fan of great point guards, that's quite frankly the only thing New York is known for other than pizza and bagels at this point is point guards. So I'm hoping he at least has a breakout year again with the Knicks.
Travis, great stuff as always. Keep up the great work. Enjoy the rest of your summer, and thanks for joining us here today.
Be easy, guys. Take care.